Children's Arts Network is community funded, supported by listeners like you, and by a grant from the Joyce N. Furman Memorial Trust, celebrating a lifetime of giving, education, and the arts.
This is ICAN. KQAC HD2 Portland 89.9.
KQOC HD2 Glen Eden Beach 88.1.
KSLC HD2 McMinnville 90.3.
KQHR HD2 The Dalles and Hood River 88.1.
Part 18, in which Christopher Robin and Pooh come to an enchanted place, and we leave them there.
Waiting at the window. These are my two drops of rain waiting on the window pane. I'm waiting here to see which the winning one will be. Both of them have different names. One is John, and one is James. All the best and all the worst comes from which of them is first. James has just begun to ooze. He's the one I want to lose. John is waiting to begin. He's the one I want to win. James is going slowly on. Something sort of sticks to John. John is moving off at last. James is going pretty fast. John is rushing down the pane. James is going slow again. James has met a sort of smear. John is getting very near. Is he going fast enough? James has found a piece of fluff. John has hurried quickly by. James was talking to a fly. John is there, and John has won. Look, I told you, here's the sun.
It went on rain, and every day the water got a little higher, until now it was nearly up to Piglet's window. And still he hadn't done anything.
There's Pooh,
he thought to himself.
Pooh hasn't much brain, but he never comes to any harm. He does silly things and they turn out right. There's Owl. Well, Owl hasn't exactly got brain, but he knows things. He would know the right thing to do when surrounded by water. There's Rabbit. He hasn't learned in books, but he can always think of a clever plan. There's Kanga. She isn't clever, Kanga isn't. But she would be so anxious about Roo that she would do a good thing to do without thinking about it. And then there's Eeyore. And Eeyore is so miserable anyhow that he wouldn't mind about this. But I wonder what Christopher Robin would do.
Then suddenly he remembered a story which Christopher Robin had told him about a man on a desert island who had written something in a bottle and thrown it in the sea. And Piglet thought that if he wrote something in a bottle and threw it in the water, perhaps somebody would come and rescue him. He left the window and began to search his house, all of it that wasn't underwater, and at last he found a pencil and a small piece of dry paper and a bottle with a cork to it. And he wrote on one side of the paper, "Help Piglet me," and on the other side, "It's me, Piglet, help, help." Then he put the paper in the bottle, and he corked the bottle up as tightly as he could, and he leant out of his window as far as he could lean without falling in, and he threw the bottle as far as he could throw, splash! And in a little while it bobbed up again on the water, and he watched it floating slowly away in the distance until his eyes ached with looking. And sometimes he thought it was the bottle, and sometimes he thought it was just a ripple on the water which he was following. And then suddenly he knew that he would never see it again, and that he had done all that he could do to save himself.
So now,
he thought,
somebody else will have to do something. And I hope they will do it soon, because if they don't, I shall have to swim, which I can't. So I hope they do it soon.
And then he gave a very long sigh and said,
I wish Pooh were here. It's so much more friendly with two.
Market Square. I had a penny. A bright new penny. I took my penny to the market square. I wanted a rabbit, a little brown rabbit, and I looked for a rabbit most everywhere. For I went to the stall where they sold sweet lavender.
Only a penny for a bunch of lavender!
Have you got a rabbit? 'Cause I don't want lavender. But they hadn't got a rabbit, not anywhere there. I had a penny, and I had another penny. I took my pennies to the market square. I did want a rabbit, a little baby rabbit, and I looked for rabbits most everywhere. And I went to the store where they sold fresh mackerel.
Nodding! Tuppence for a fresh caught mackerel!
Have you got a rabbit? 'Cause I don't like mackerel. But they hadn't got a rabbit. Not anywhere there. I found a sixpence. A little white sixpence. I took it in my hand to the market square. I was buying my rabbit. I do like rabbits. And I looked for my rabbit most everywhere. So I went to the stall where they sold fine saucepans.
Walk up! Walk up! Sixpence for a saucepan!
Could I have a rabbit? 'Cause we've got two saucepans. But they hadn't got a rabbit. Not anywhere there. I had nothing. No, I hadn't got nothing. So I didn't go down to the market square, but I walked on the common, the old gold common,
and I saw little rabbits most everywhere.
So I'm sorry for the people who sell fine saucepans. I'm sorry for the people who sell fresh mackerel. I'm sorry for the people who sell sweet lavender, 'cause they haven't got a rabbit. Not anywhere there.
Open it, Pooh. What is it, Pooh? I know what it is. No, you don't.
And other helpful remarks of this sort. And, of course, Pooh was opening it as quickly as ever he could, but without cutting the string, because you never know when a bit of string might be useful. At last, it was undone. When Pooh saw what it was, he nearly fell down. He was so pleased. It was a special pencil case. There were pencils in it marked B for Bear, and pencils marked HB for Helping Bear. And pencils marked BB for Brave Bear. There was a knife for sharpening the pencils, and India rubber for rubbing out anything which you had spelt wrong, and a ruler for ruling lines for the words to walk on, and inches marked on the ruler in case you wanted to know how many inches anything was. And blue pencils, and red pencils, and green pencils for saying special things in blue and red and green. And all these lovely things were in little pockets of their own in a special case which shut with a click when you clicked it. And they were all for Pooh.
Oh, said Pooh.
Oh, Pooh, said everybody else except Eel.
Thank you, growled Pooh.
But Eeyore was saying to himself,
this writing business, pencils and whatnot, overrated if you ask me. Silly stuff, nothing in it.
Later on, when they'd all said goodbye and thank you to Christopher Robin, Pooh and Piglet walked home thoughtfully together in the golden evening, and for a long time they were silent.
When you wake up in the morning, Pooh, said Piglet at last, what's the first thing you say to yourself?
What's for breakfast? Said Pooh. What do you say, Piglet?
I say, I wonder what's going to happen exciting today,
said Piglet. Pooh nodded thoughtfully.
It's the same thing, he said.
The End. When I was one, I had just begun. When I was two, I was nearly new. And when I was three, I was hardly me. And when I was four, I was not much more. When I was five, I was just alive. But now I am six, I'm as clever as clever. So I think I'll be six now forever and ever. In which Christopher Robin and Pooh come to an enchanted place. And we leave them there. Christopher Robin was going away. Nobody knew why he was going. Nobody knew where he was going. Indeed, nobody even knew why he knew that Christopher Robin was going away. But somehow or other, everybody in the forest felt that it was happening at last. Even smallest of all, a friend and relation of Rabbit's who thought he had once seen Christopher Robin's foot, but couldn't be quite sure because perhaps it was something else, even S of A told himself that things were going to be different. And Late and Early, two other friends and relations, said, "Well, Early," and "Well, Late," to each other in such a hopeless sort of way that it really didn't seem any good waiting for the answer. One day when he felt that he couldn't wait any longer, Rabbit brained out a notice, and this is what it said. "Notice, a meeting of everybody will meet at the house at Pooh Corner to pass a resolution by order, keep to the left, signed Rabbit." He had to write this out two or three times before he could get the resolution to look like what he thought it was going to when he began to spell it. But when at last it was finished, he took it round to everybody and read it out to them, and they all said they would come.
"Well,"
said Eeyore that afternoon when he saw them all walking up to his house,
"this is a surprise. Am I asked too?"
"Don't mind Eeyore," whispered Rabbit to Pooh. "I told him all about it this morning."
Everybody said, "How do you do?" to Eeyore, and Eeyore said that he didn't. Not to notice. And then they sat down. And as soon as they were all sitting down, Rabbit stood up again.
"We all know why we're here," he said. "But I have asked my friend Eeyore..."
"That's me," said Eeyore. "Grand."
"I have asked him to propose a resolution."
And he sat down again.
"Now then, Eeyore," he said.
"Don't bustle me," said Eeyore, getting up slowly. "Don't now then me."
He took a piece of paper from behind his ear and unfolded it.
"Nobody knows anything about this," he went on. "This is a surprise."
He coughed in an important way and began again.
"Hum! Whatnots and et cetera's. Before I begin, or perhaps I should say, before I end, I have a piece of poetry to read to you. Hitherto, a long word meaning, well, you'll see what it means directly. Hitherto, as I was saying, all the poetry in the forest has been written by Pooh, a bear with a pleasing manner, but a positively startling lack of brain. The poem which I am now about to read to you was written by Eeyore, or myself, in a quiet moment. If somebody will take Roo's bullseye away from him and wake up Owl, we shall all be able to enjoy it. I call it Poem."
This was it.
"Christopher Robin is going. At least I think he is. Where? Nobody knows. But he is going. I mean, he goes. To rhyme with nose. Do we care? To rhyme with where? We do very much. Oh, I haven't got a rhyme for that is in the second line yet. Bother. Now I haven't got a rhyme for bother. Bother. Those two bothers will have to rhyme with each other. Bother. The fact is, this is more difficult than I thought. I ought. Very good indeed. I ought to begin again. But it is easier to stop. Christopher Robin, goodbye. I and all your friends sends, I mean all your friend send, very awkward this, it keeps going wrong. Well, anyhow, we send our love. End. If anybody wants to clap,
said Eeyore when he had read this,
now is the time to do it.
They all clapped.
Thank you, said Eeyore. Unexpected and gratifying, if a little lacking in smack.
It's much better than mine,
said Pooh admiringly, and he really thought it was.
Well,
explained Eeyore modestly,
it was meant to be.
The resolution, said Rabbit, is that we all sign it and take it to Christopher Robin.
So it was signed Pooh, Wall, Piglet, Eeyore, Rabbit, Kanga, Blot, Smudge. And they all went off to Christopher Robin's house with it.
Hello, everybody,
said Christopher Robin.
Hello, Pooh.
They all said, hello, and felt awkward and unhappy suddenly, because it was a sort of goodbye they were saying, and they didn't want to think about it. So they stood around and waited for somebody else to speak, and they nudged each other and said, go on. And gradually Eeyore was nudged to the front, and the others crowded behind him. What is it, Eeyore? Asked Christopher Robin. Eeyore swished his tail from side to side, so as to encourage himself, and began.
Christopher Robin,
he said,
we've come to say, to give you, it's called, written by, but we've all, because we've heard, I mean, we all know. Well, you see, it's... We... You... Well, that, to put it as shortly as possible, is what it is.
He turned round angrily on the others and said,
everybody crowds round so in this forest. There's no space. I never saw a more spreading lot of animals in my life, and all in the wrong places. Can't you see that Christopher Robin wants to be alone? I'm going.
And he humped off. Not quite knowing why, the others began edging away. And when Christopher Robin had finished reading poem and was looking up to say, thank you, only Pooh was left. It's a comforting sort of thing to have, said Christopher Robin, folding up the paper and putting it in his pocket. Come on, Pooh. And he walked off quickly.
Where are we going?
Said Pooh, hurrying after him and wondering whether it was to be an explore or what shall I do about you-know-what.
Nowhere,
said Christopher Robin. So they began going there. And after they had walked a little way, Christopher Robin said, what do you like doing best in the world, Pooh?
Well,
said Pooh,
what do I like best?
And then he had to stop and think, because although eating honey was a very good thing to do, there was a moment just before you began to eat it which was better than when you were, but he didn't know what it was called. And then he thought that being with Christopher Robin was a very good thing to do, and having Piglet near was a very friendly thing to have. And so when he had thought it all out, he said,
what I like best in the whole world is me and Piglet going to see you, and you saying, what about a little something? And me saying,
Well, I shouldn't mind a little something, should you, Piglet? And it being a hummy sort of day outside, and birds singing.
Yeah, I like that too, said Christopher Robin. But what I like doing best is nothing.
How do you do nothing?
Asked Pooh, after he had wondered for a long time. Well, it's when people call out to you just as you're going off to do it. What are you going to do, Christopher Robin? And you say, oh, nothing. And then you go and do it.
Oh, I see,
said Pooh. Well, this is a nothing sort of thing that we're doing now.
Oh, I see,
said Pooh again. It means just going along, listening to all the things you can't hear and not bothering.
Oh,
said Pooh. They walked on, thinking of this and that, and by and by they came to an enchanted place on the very top of the forest called Galleon's Lap, which is 60-something trees in a circle. And Christopher Robin knew that it was enchanted, because nobody had ever been able to count whether it was 63 or 64, not even when he tied a piece of string round each tree after he counted it. Being enchanted, its floor was not like the floor of the forest, gorse and bracken and heather, but close-set grass, quiet and smooth and green. It was the only place in the forest where you could sit down carelessly, without getting up again almost at once and looking for somewhere else. Sitting there, they could see the whole world spread out until it reached the sky, and whatever there was all the world over was with them in Galleon's Lap. Suddenly, Christopher Robin began to tell Pooh about some of the things. People called kings and queens, and something called factors, and a place called Europe, and an island in the middle of the sea where no ships came, and how you make a suction pump, if you want to, and when knights were knighted, and what comes from Brazil. And Pooh, his back against one of the 60-something trees, and his paws folded in front of him, said,
Oh,
and
I didn't know.
And thought how wonderful it would be to have a real brain which could tell you things. And by, Christopher Robin came to an end of the things and was silent. And he sat there looking out over the world and wishing it wouldn't stop. But Pooh was thinking too, and he said suddenly to Christopher Robin,
Is it a very grand thing to be an afternoon, what you said?
A what? Said Christopher Robin lazily, as he listened to something else.
On a horse,
explained Pooh. A knight?
Oh, was that it?
Said Pooh.
I thought it was Is it as grand as a king and factors and all the other things you said?
Well, it's not as grand as a king, said Christopher Robin. And then, as Pooh seemed disappointed, he added quickly, But it's grander than factors.
Could a bear be one?
Of course he could, said Christopher Robin. I'll make you one. And he took a stick and touched Pooh on the shoulder and said, Rise, Sir Pooh de Bear, most faithful of all my knights. So Pooh rose and sat down again and said,
Thank you.
Which is the proper thing to say when you have been made a knight. And he went into a dream again, in which he and Sir Pump and Sir Brazil and Factors lived together with a horse and were faithful knights, all except Factors, who looked after the horse, to good King Christopher Robin. And every now and then he shook his head and said to himself,
I'm not getting it right.
Then he began to think of all the things Christopher Robin would want to tell him when he came back from wherever he was going to, and how muddling it would be for a bear of very little brain to try and get them right in his mind.
So perhaps,
he said sadly to himself,
Christopher Robin won't tell me any more.
And he wondered if being a faithful knight meant that you just went on being faithful without being told things. Then suddenly again, Christopher Robin, who was still looking at the world with his chin in his hands, called out, Pooh?
Yes,
said Pooh. Pooh?
Yes, Christopher Robin?
I'm not going to do nothing anymore.
Never again?
Well, not so much. They don't let you.
Pooh waited for him to go on, but he was silent again.
Yes, Christopher Robin,
said Pooh helpfully.
Pooh, when I'm, you know, when I'm not doing nothing, will you come up here sometimes?
Just me?
Yes, Pooh.
Will you be here too?
Yes, Pooh, I will be, really. I promise I will be, Pooh.
That's good,
said Pooh.
Pooh, promise you won't forget about me ever. Not even when I'm 100.
Pooh thought for a little.
How old shall I be then?
99.
Pooh nodded.
I promise,
he said. Still with his eyes on the world, Christopher Robin put out a hand and felt for Pooh's paw.
Pooh, said Christopher Robin earnestly, if I... If I'm not quite...
He stopped and tried again.
Pooh, whatever happens, you will understand, won't you?
Understand what?
Oh, nothing. He laughed and jumped to his feet. Come on.
Where?
Said Pooh.
Anywhere,
said Christopher Robin. So they went off together. But wherever they go, and whatever happens to them on the way, in that enchanted place on the top of the forest, a little boy and his bear will always be playing.
Complete works of Winnie the Pooh, performed by Peter Dennis, based on the stage show Bother. Music composed and conducted by Don Davis. Piano played by Gloria Chang and clarinet by Charles Boiteau. Production recorded and mixed by Jeff Sykes at KCRW Santa Monica. Executive producer Jacqueline Delorier. Radio production directed by Christopher Toyne. A co-production of KCRW and Bother LA Production.
You've just heard the complete works of Winnie the Pooh on ICAN HD2 and ICANradio.org. Unabridged recordings of the four Winnie the Pooh books can be found at danpour.com or by calling 1-855-369-6768.
You're listening to ICAN. Join us every day at this time for the complete works of Winnie the Pooh. That was In Which Christopher Robin and Pooh Come to an Enchanted Place and We Leave Them There. That was the last program in the complete works of Winnie the Pooh. You can find more information and listen to the complete works of Winnie the Pooh on demand at icanradio.org.
The International Children's Arts Network, ICAN, is made possible by the Herbert A. Templeton Foundation, the Oregon Cultural Trust, the Brookby Foundation, and the Oregon Community Foundation. ICAN, poetry, story time, and music for kids.
¶¶ A long, long time ago, when magic was a respected art, and even evil sorcerers dwelled in quite respectable kingdoms, there lived a prince named Siegfried. Now, Prince Siegfried was deeply worried about the coming of his 21st birthday, for his parents had declared that on that day he must choose a princess to be his bride. But Siegfried knew of no princess in the kingdom whom he wished to marry. Indeed, Siegfried was not in love with anyone. The day grew closer, and still there was no one who had won his heart. All the beautiful and eligible princesses of the kingdom were invited to the grand ball celebrating Siegfried's 21st birthday. Surely someone whom he would be willing to choose as his bride would be there. It was a magnificently decorated ballroom that night. Candles shone from the crystal chandeliers. The lords wore their white ties and tails with medals on their jackets. The ladies wore their most beautiful gowns with their most precious rings over gloved hands. The orchestra beckoned them towards the dancing with the most inviting music. Queen signaled to the conductor of the orchestra, and the grand waltz began. Siegfried was not eager to dance. He danced with his mother, he danced with his cousins and with dear friends, but the more the prince danced, the more unhappy he became. He simply could not imagine marrying anyone whom he had not met before or with whom he was not in love. But when the king and queen presented the prince with a brand new crossbow, his eyes lit up, and as the orchestra struck up a polonaise, Siegfried just had to join in the dancing. But neither all the delightful dancing nor all the marvelous music could bring cheer to Prince Siegfried's heart. The prospect of having to choose a bride that very evening simply made him miserable. And so, very quietly and unnoticed, Siegfried slipped out of the palace with his crossbow and wandered aimlessly through the forest. All at once, he found himself at the edge of a shimmering, moonlit lake. He gazed in astonishment at an extraordinary sight. A flock of beautiful white swans were gliding to and fro across the silver waters of the lake. Siegfried was overwhelmed by the beauty and magic of the sight before him. But there was more. As if in a trance, he beheld the first of all the swans, with a jeweled crown upon her head, gliding to the shore, where she was transformed into the most beautiful princess he had ever seen. Hesitatingly, gently, he approached the princess and asked how all this had come to pass. She answered that she was the Princess Odette, and that she and her sisters were under a terrible spell cast by the evil magician Von Rothbart. She and her sisters had all been turned into swans and were destined to remain so all their lives. Only between the witching hours of midnight and dawn could they return to their human forms. But at the very first light of day, they must become swans again. And then Prince Siegfried and the Swan Princess danced together in the moonlight. "Can the spell ever be broken?" asked Siegfried, who, captivated by Odette's beauty and won over by her grace of manner and sincerity, had fallen hopelessly in love with her. "Only if a prince who has never loved before declares his undying and endless love for me, only then can the spell be broken," replied the princess. "Then so it shall be," declared Siegfried. "At midnight, come to the palace, for it is then that I must announce the name of my betrothed. And that name shall be yours, my magnificent Odette, for you are the first I have ever loved. Then shall the spell be broken, and we shall live together in happiness forever." "So it shall be, my handsome Prince Siegfried," replied Odette, who now was equally in love with him. "At midnight, I will come to the palace in my human form, there to become your bride." Siegfried returned to the palace ball, overjoyed at the plan he and Odette had made. Filled with love for her in his heart, Siegfried slipped back into the palace as easily as when he had left. The guests were far too busy dining and dancing to have noticed the prince's departure and now his return. A trumpet fanfare called the ladies and their noble escorts to order. Each princess was announced and entered the ballroom on the arm of her escort, for no princess would ever attend such a grand ball without a nobleman to dance with. Each in turn was then introduced to the prince, who now stood on a throned platform next to his mother. The princesses proceeded to the dance floor with their elegant partners. The orchestra struck up a waltz, and the prince moved gracefully from one princess to the next, dancing dutifully with each one. Indeed, he was most gracious, because he knew that at the stroke of midnight, Odette would arrive, and then he would triumphantly introduce her to one and all as his chosen bride. Another fanfare was played, and to everyone's astonishment, an uninvited guest stood at the top of the elegant marble staircase. He was dressed all in black, an ominous-looking figure, and known to all as the evil magician, Von Rothbart. And with him, why, Siegfried could scarcely believe his eyes, for standing beside Von Rothbart was a beautiful woman, also dressed in black, who looked exactly like his beloved Odette. Von Rothbart announced her as his daughter Odile, but Siegfried was sure that she was Odette. Slowly and lovingly, the prince advanced towards her, took her hands in his, and together they began to dance. The clock had not struck 12, and Siegfried could not imagine why Odette had arrived on von Rothbart's arm. He did not know that the evil von Rothbart had followed him through the forest, had overheard his conversation with Odette, and had turned his own daughter, Odile, into the very image of Siegfried's beloved Odette. The more Siegfried danced, the more certain he was of his love. Unable to contain his joy, he turned to the assembled throng and announced that this princess in black would be his bride. As the clock struck midnight, a wondrous and beautiful white swan appeared. All the dancers gathered round her, and, to Siegfried's horror, the swan turned into the Princess Odette.